The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat serving New York's 28th District on the east side of Manhattan. Welcome back, one of my favorites, Senator Krueger. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Let's talk about some of the past tensions that have existed between the Senate Democrats and Governor Cuomo. There are days I think he picks on you. Am I wrong about that?
I think you're right. I think he does get up in the morning and say, let's see what I can pick on the Senate Democrats about. But you know what? I think we've discovered we're a pretty tough crowd. We can take it and still get things done. So be it. It seems to be one of the unusual characteristics of that city on the hill we all love.
Do you have any sense of why he does that? You know, in the old days, he had the Republicans in the Senate to pick on, and he would use them one way or another. Is he doing the same thing with the Senate Democrats? Could he not just get out of that mode?
You know, those are, I think, mostly questions for him, not us.
I do ask
I know that Andrew Cuomo likes to, you know, dictate how everything goes every day. I get that. But the Senate Democrats also think we have a important role in government. We are a new conference with, sincerely, a huge number of brand new senators who are learning the ropes and want to do things that they believe are the right things to do for their district, and more power to them, who don't think there's any old rules to follow because they were never there under the old rules anyway. We have a new leader. She is both incredibly diplomatic and smart and underestimated, and also a true consensus builder. So when you have a legislative house and you're trying to build consensus, that means people want to be heard, they want to speak their mind, and it takes a while to get to consensus. So, you know, depending on the day of the week, the governor felt we didn't move quickly enough, or the governor felt we moved way too quickly and went too far. So pick a day, pick a topic. We were just trying to do the jobs we were sent to Albany to do. And the storyline changed quite a bit this year with us in the majority.
So is the fact that you're in the majority threatening to the governor, do you think?
I don't know. It's this governor. It would be any governor. If you've had a city that has operated for most of the last 100 years as a split political setup, you, if you're the governor, can always blame the House that isn't your party, right? And say, I can't get it done because of them. When everybody's one party, you suddenly lose that reason things can't get done. Now, if certain things weren't intended to get done and people were falling back on, well, it's only a one House bill, suddenly we're in a world where a whole lot of things can be two House, same as bills, and the executive needs to confront, does he actually support those things? Is he going to want to have those things become law? Or is he going to try to confront not wanting those things, which is his right, but that means saying to his own party, this is not what I want. And I think that is all new territory. So I think, again, not this governor per se, but any governor would be struggling with the new dynamic of two houses that want to work together and can, in fact, work together to pass a lot, and I mean sincerely a lot, of important two-house legislation.
So he said to me in an interview that he's the real progressive, that he's the left. Is that true?
You know, I don't spend my days trying to figure out where I fall on the spectrum particularly, so I don't know where anyone else thinks they fall either. You know, I'm more likely to answer that question. We don't even know what a left looks like in New York. We're so far from it. So the governor might be to the left of most legislators. I never tried to put us all on a public opinion poll or a spectrum map. You know, so if the governor wants to be to the far left, personally, that's okay with me. I proudly call myself a liberal, and for years have been told I was too liberal for my district, and I keep telling people, well, you can vote me out if you like. It's okay, but this is who I am and what I stand for. I never imagined holding myself up against the governor or, frankly, anyone else in politics as to whether of where I stand next to them.
So let's go to some specifics, Liz Krueger, otherwise known, I'm so sorry to have to remind everybody of this, as the good Krueger, because there used to be two Kruegers. One went away for a while.
And we had no relationship to each other.
No, and it was spelled a little differently. So, okay, so Liz Krueger, with that out of the way, the question I have for you is marijuana. What happened there?
So a bunch of things happened. One, I think we ultimately just ran out of time in June 2019 to get the full package done. We had tried to move it within the budget. That fell apart at the last minute. Then we came back and tried to get it done post-budget. And that also partly fell apart and partly got accomplished because it ended up getting broken up into multiple pieces by the very end, and we passed two parts of the full marijuana legalization bill. We passed the section on CBD regulation and hemp regulation. So that became law. I'm not sure the governor signed it yet, but it will become law, I believe. And then we did the decriminalization, partial decriminalization and expungement of records. And that got signed by the governor the other day. What we did not get done was the actual legalization of adult use recreational, which I still think is a crucial thing to accomplish, and an expansion of the medical marijuana program in New York State, which I also think is crucial. And I'm feeling pretty good about walking back into both of those areas come January 2020 and trying to get them done. I would have preferred one full omnibus bill, as Crystal's People spoke. Strokes and I had written over multiple years and kept amending to adjust to the concerns and needs of our colleagues, but we didn't get it over the finish line in 1 year. But again, Crystal and I are both right back in the fight, and I think we could get it done next year. I really do.
In my good state of Massachusetts, where I live, we have it. We passed it. Doesn't seem to be any problem getting it done. But there did seem to be some interstitial or problematic areas in New York State. The question is, were they real or were they just sort of positioning on the part of the actors?
Well, so remember, the difference between Massachusetts and New York, you had a referendum vote, and the people said, we want legalized marijuana, and voted for it. We are not an INR state over here in New York. We could not give it to the people to vote on. Most states that have legal adult-use marijuana have INR states where the people voted for it, not the legislature, although now we have a couple of states where the legislature have moved, like Illinois just moved a couple of weeks ago. And so New York needed to do it the legislative way, and I believe that legislators are more risk-averse than the general public to changes in marijuana laws. So we had concerns about how do we track driving while under the influence and what kind of penalties do we establish. We had some concerns in some parts of the state to having dispensaries selling legalized marijuana. The bill Crystal and I carry had opt-out options, and we were prepared to move to opt-in, meaning you weren't in unless you took a vote to do so. I'm not too concerned about that. However, a local community wants it because it would still have legalized marijuana. It would just be the question of whether you were going to have retail shops. And if you don't have retail shops, you're not creating jobs, and generating tax revenue. But if that's what you decide at the local level, so be it. I'm quite sure there are going to be enough towns in the state of New York, particularly our big cities, who have no problem with opting in or being in the system, that there'll be plenty of access. So some people thought that was a big issue. I actually never did think that was going to be a big issue and was prepared to go any direction people wanted on that. I'm much more focused on making sure that we get the criminal element out of the sale of cannabis, that when people go to buy it, they know exactly what they're buying and what's really in it and what kind of dosage. I would like to see a legalized market that is regulated and taxed. I want to make sure that the market provides for licenses in communities of color where the most harm has been done by criminalizing marijuana. I wanted to make sure there was expungement of records of people caught up in marijuana business that never should have ended up with records in the first place. So I want to do this right, but I think there are lots of paths to get there. And we can't give it to the voters to vote on. So we've got to figure out how to do it legislatively.
That's so interesting because, yes, we do have in Massachusetts, we do have initiative and referendum. People get to vote. But it seems to me, and I'm not calling you a name, but it seems to me, you know, to say, well, you guys can vote on it over there and we can't. We have a legislative process which is more moribund, doesn't speak well of the legislature.
Well, I think it's simply just a fact. If you look at, for good and for bad, states that have INR tend to be more willing to make big jumps in their governmental process. And sometimes that has not worked out at all. For example, California decreasing its funding for education through public referendums over the years.
I remember that.
But states passing legalized marijuana, certainly the people who support it are glad their states did it. I talked to people from Colorado, some of which are thrilled Colorado got in big and fast and early, and others who have real concerns about specific things within the referendum that have proved problematic that they've needed now to go back and change through the legislative process. So I don't think there's one silver bullet of how to run government. And by and large, I don't like the idea of governments deciding major public policy based on today's public opinion polls versus a week from now's public
opinion. Isn't that democracy?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if we ever set up our union as a republic to be a direct democracy. Hell, we're not even allowed to pick our own president, are we? So that's a great set of questions, maybe for smarter minds than mine. But no, I do think it's a concern if you're making all government decisions based on what today's public opinion poll says.
Okay.
I think that the concept is you elect people to be your leaders, to use as much facts and science as they can get their hands on to make the best decisions, which might not be the popular decisions all the time.
You know, my little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, in less than a year, made $1 million by selling to, I don't want to put this in a bad way, but you New Yorkers, who came over the line and bought all of the stuff here?
That's right. That's the ridiculousness of Massachusetts legalizing and New York not, because we're not going to build a wall through the Berkshires to keep New Yorkers out. And Massachusetts is perfectly happy to sell to us. And so the question is, do we really want all of our money going into the Massachusetts economy? Because people can just drive, what, like a half an hour from Albany to the Massachusetts border, right?
Well,
that's
45 minutes, unless you're going really fast.
Okay,
you know.
And I'm not saying who drives what speed, but, you know, New Jersey is very likely to legalize very soon. I'm down here in New York City, and again, without traffic, it's half an hour across the bridges or tunnels. So, and then, of course, Vermont, Canada. People go back and forth between Buffalo and Canada multiple times a day sometimes. so it starts to become a question of common sense almost. What do you think you're preventing by not having legalized marijuana? And some people would argue, forget other states. New York State is the largest marijuana market in the country right now. It's just that none of it is legal. It's not regulated. It's not taxed. And way too much of the profits are going to the cartels who control the marijuana business. Why would we want that to continue when we know there are rational, legal ways to handle it and regulate it? I would far prefer we grow our own stuff in New York. New York State farmers gain the revenue of growing the product. New York State manufacturers, and I think there are all kinds of wins for the state of New York from a legalized system, but no one should kid themselves. If you think you're stopping your children from getting access to marijuana now, I'm sorry, you are not checking what reality is, because the New York City Police Department will tell you it is easier to get marijuana than cigarettes or alcohol in my city, because there are apps where it will just get delivered to you within 15 minutes, no questions asked. Now, so you have no idea who's delivering it is or what it is. And that should be concerning to parents, not that we would have a legalized market where you'd have to prove you're 21 and show ID to get it.
Now, not to prolong the agony here, Liz Krueger, but the governor told me that he had it all figured out. You could have done the whole thing in the budget and smacked your hands together and it would have been done. But there was a problem with the Senate. Is that right?
No, I don't think that is right. I think the governor told his people to walk away from negotiations.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have any more meetings, and it didn't get into the budget. I know it's another one of those, you started the show saying, why does he wake up in the morning trying to blame the Senate for something? I don't know. He sort of does, and that was one of them. But no, the Senate did not walk away during the budget.
So let's take another one.
The Assembly. Yeah. Sure.
Right. Let's take another one. And that is, of course, the loss of Amazon with tens of thousands of jobs. Again, you know, the question was it the Senate and Mike Gianaris, the number two leader there, who created this rationale for walking away or having Amazon walk away from this deal? In the aftermath of all of that, any thoughts?
Amazon seems to be piling into New York City regardless of that storyline. They're taking space in my district, in Senator Hoylman's district, in Brooklyn. They may not be taking the space in Queens, and the total of the new number of jobs they bring in, I have no idea, but they certainly haven't walked away from New York City. If you read the real estate pages where there are new announcements continually made about Amazon looking out space or contracting for space. I do think that the Amazon in Queens storyline was many storylines rolled together that people decided, frankly, to oversimplify as the politics. Because one of the storylines is Amazon realized it overcommitted to big spaces and it didn't really need that much space in D.C. and New York, and that their competition with every city in the country sort of got away with them. They never got away from them. They never intended to commit to space for 50,000 new workers in two locations. The other part of the storyline that I don't think gets told enough is, what company was that and where did they want to go? Did anybody notice that they had a terrible reputation with labor and that New York City is a major labor town? Did anyone take notice of the fact that Amazon is sort of the punchline for the closing of small mom-and-pop stores in a state with huge amounts of stores closing and empty retail space? Did anybody look at the punchline, what major international company doesn't pay any taxes at all, and now we're offering them $3 billion in tax credits and abatements? You know, with all due respect, I'm just not sure who was advising who on this entire storyline. And then when Amazon was challenged by the city council, not the state legislature, but the city council at a public hearing, how many jobs are you going to provide for the poor people who live in the public housing right next door? Amazon said probably 30. Who wrote that script for them? So I think there's plenty of blame to go around in lots of different directions. And again, it's slightly easier just to point a finger at a specific person who happens to be the number two in the state Senate. But sorry, I think the whole storyline's a lot more complicated than that.
Don't
Having said that, yeah. Long Island City doesn't seem to be particularly upset. The space has already been rented out to someone else. Long Island City was not a blighted, underutilized area of New York City. If Amazon was coming to Western New York or upstate New York, where everyone was desperate for new jobs and nobody was fighting over the use of space, I think it would have been a completely different storyline. But Long Island City in 2019 was not exactly underutilized, blighted area. And so lots of parts of the story can be told.
Okay, so Liz Krueger, we have about 7 minutes left of this program, and I want to use them well. And so I'm going to ask you to keep the answers short, but I know that you've been talking to your constituents on major accomplishments that the Senate has done this year, one of which is rent control. There are those landlords who are saying, because you've upped the ante there, you've made it better for tenants, you're going to actually screw up the system and it'll be bad. Is that right?
That's what some of them are saying, but that's not actually true. What we did was went back to most of the original law as it was written, undid the giveaways that were built into the bill over the last 35 years, created more of an even playing field for tenants' rights within the context of having leases and apartments. And I am not particularly concerned that we may have decreased the revenue stream for apartment buildings that the values had become completely overheated and unrealistic. So real estate talked about forever that if your rent rolls were basically what you owed in a mortgage was 6 or 7 times what your rent rolls provided, you were in good shape. And we got to the point where they were paying so much for these buildings that they needed 20 and 30 times, which meant they were skyrocketing their rents, which meant the whole system got corrupted with people overpaying for buildings, people who didn't know anything about real estate becoming sort of the equivalent of war profiteers trying to buy up everything under the sun, and then trying to evict people under every imaginable reason. What we have done is to decrease the incentives for people to evict their tenants, to stabilize, quote unquote, the actual universe of stabilized housing, so that if you're in rent regulation, you stay in rent regulation under reasonable increases in the costs. And we built in some other protections for tenants' rights through the court system.
Okay, Liz, I'm sorry for interrupting, sure. But I want to get vaccinations in. Very contentious issue in New York. There are some religious groups who say we don't want our kids vaccinated, but the legislature thought differently.
The legislature made the decision at the request of medical societies that we needed to get rid of the religious exemption for vaccines because there was no major or minor religion in the state or the country who actually tells you not to vaccinate your children. And that was being used as an excuse by people who otherwise didn't want to vaccinate their children, putting us all at risk. We reduced the herd immunity of the entire population of New York State because so many people were choosing not to vaccinate their children and putting everyone else at risk. When people I shouldn't decide whether they vaccinate their child, I say, well, that's fine, except for the fact that your children are putting other people at risk of illness.
Let's talk a little about the green light bill in the couple of seconds we have left. Driver's licenses could be obtained by people who were undocumented.
So New York did pass that law, as I think 12 or 13 other states have had that law for quite a while. It doesn't give you any right to citizenship. It doesn't give you any right to any other quote unquote benefits of citizenship. It just says you can get a driver's license. We know you're here. We know you're driving. Now you'll have a driver's license, which means we'll know how to find you when we need you. We can hold you accountable for violating driving laws and getting into accidents. And you will actually have to get insurance to drive your car, which is a great thing because it protects us all. So personally, it's a win-win. And I am constantly amazed at the things people use to argue the world is ending in panic. People are here without legal status, as they've been here since the beginning of the country without legal status. Now at least they'll have to follow the laws when they're driving cars. And trust me, they've been driving cars.
Liz Krueger, very quickly, because we are at the end, let me ask you about the idea that New York passed this law that will allow the president's tax returns to be released to the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. Was that a good thing?
I do think it's a good thing, since he was trying to avoid ever having this information released to Congress, which has the right to get the information. But as you know, the president controls the IRS. So Congress asking the IRS doesn't mean Congress is going to get what it asks for. This is not carte blanche access. This is access to a committee and a chairman asking for the information. And it just so happens that our current president did file a New York State tax return. So this is a mechanism to assist Congress to play out its constitutional right. When you're the president of the United States, you are supposed to be prepared to answer any and all hard questions. But that is part of the deal, and that any other president in modern times would have released his tax returns years ago, hence none of this discussion would ever be necessary.
It's always great to talk to Liz Krueger, somebody who I have admired for many, many years. Liz, congratulations on all your hard work. I know that you do work very hard, and that of your conference, which is really a breath of fresh air. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Take care.